Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast, your weekly dose of knife news and information about knives and knife collecting. Here's your host, Bob the Knife Junkie DeMarco.
Welcome to the Knife Junkie Podcast. I'm Bob DeMarco. On this edition of the show, I'm speaking with Chaz Fisher, General Manager of Boker Knives USA. Boker is a company I have always valued for its collaborations with custom knife makers, allowing the average Joe, such as myself, to enjoy the finer custom designs otherwise out of reach. That's always been my attachment. But I met Chaz at Blade Show this year and immediately began to wonder what it must be like working for a company that's been making knives for nearly 200 years, or maybe more, and with factory and distribution all over the world. How does he get any work done with that staggering selection of knives all about? Well, I'm betting the answer is that making these knives a reality is much more fun than actually collecting them. We'll find out about that. But first, be sure to like, comment, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and download the show to your favorite podcast app. And as always, if you like what we do here, think it's worth the scratch and the time, go to Patreon and check out the different levels of support we have, the knife giveaways, the exclusive content, and so much more. Quickest way to do that is to head over to thenifejunkie.com/Patreon. Again, that's thenifejunkie.com/Patreon.
The Get Upside app is your way to get cash back on your gas purchases. Get Upside is an app you put on your smartphone, and whenever you need to get gas, search your area for savings, claim your discount, fill up your tank, and then take a picture of the receipt with your phone. And that's it. You've just got cash back. Visit thenifejunkie.com/save on gas to get the app and start saving. Again, that's thenifejunkie.com/save on gas.
Visit the Knife Junkie at thenifejunkie.com to catch all of our podcast episodes, videos, photos, and more.
Chaz, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure. When I met you in Atlanta at Blade Show this year, actually, one of the first things you told me was that your brother was also presenting and is a knife maker, and made me think, is there something in the family? Have you always been into knives?
Well, I think just a from birth obsession with the Fisher boys of all things sharp and pointy. So I know that each of us have had that since an early age.
Wow. So that landed
nothing commercially.
Okay, gotcha. Well, so that landed you a career in knives, man, which is enviable to a lot of us, I'm sure. But like anything, the grass is the grass can appear green from a distance. So tell me how you got into knives as a career and what the trajectory of that looked like.
Well, my professional knife career is not especially long, actually. I've been with Boker less than a year now, about 9 months now. And before that, for several years, I worked with SOG, SOG Knives. And I got pulled into SOG because of a connection that I had who was there, the president at the time. I had worked with him in the outdoor industry, kind of the broader outdoor industry, which is where I came from. And, he was, pulling off a turnaround of SOG, a turnaround in sale of SOG, and, recruited me as part of that team. And so that's how I got pulled into SOG. And, you know, I have to admit, you said it was, you know, it's, grass is always greener. It appeared greener, and I thought I'd jump over to it, and it has been greener. So it's been a really great run to work with knives. I love it.
SOG went through a big retooling a couple of years back. I my first exposure to SOG was through their version of the MACV SOG Bowie. That's what basically launched them, and always loved that. And I have one and want more, but you know, then they went through a sort of a big box period, mm-hmm. and then they came out of that so elegantly, and you were a part of that?
Yep. That was, you know, of course, a lot of people put a lot of effort into that, you know, but I was part of that, you know, at that table of the people who staged that repositioning of the brand.
So what is the work like for you in a company like SOG or now Boker?
Well, it's, you know, it's complex. I mean, it's not easy. It's, you know, of course I love knives and I say that the grass is green here and it is. And I, you know, every day I get to, hold the things that we make and really am into them, right? Because I love knives. But like any, you know, business, there are a lot of headaches. There are a lot of fires every day. There are problems that arise that need to be solved. And most of them are not as glamorous as just hanging out and playing with knives. But it's both challenging and rewarding, just like any job, but it's especially compelling for me because it does have to do with knives. And like we've discussed, that has always been a really big passion of mine.
Boker as the company we know it now, I mean, before we started rolling, you said they've been going way back, and I want to find out about that. But as the company we know now, they started in the 1830s, early 1830s.
Depending on which company you're talking about, the okay. German one or the American one. Our official date that we use is, I believe it's 1869, that Boker in Solingen was founded. Prior to that, the Bokers were making blades of some kind for quite a bit before that. And I don't know precisely how long they go back, but, you know, more than 100 years. In 1834, when they were making knives, but not in the town of Solingen, they did, send one of the brothers over to the U.S. to found Boker USA. I believe that was 1838 or so. And so that was when Boker first hit the shores of America. And of course they were making over there, but 1869 is when they officially, founded the company in Solingen.
And so I saw an interesting factoid that they made muskets and 18,000 sabers mm-hmm. during the Civil War for the Union. I have no idea about that.
Yeah. That was, Boker USA that did that. And, yeah, for a period of time, they were in the top 10 armament suppliers to the Union Army, both for firearms, but also for sabers.
Okay, so since then, Boker has grown. I think there are three main columns that I'm aware of. I there might be more. Boker Plus, there's Tree Brand, and what are the other?
Well, there's Magnum.
Mm-hmm. Magnum,
which right. is kind of our price point entry level stuff. Okay. There's Boker Plus, which is there are different sourcing strategies behind each of these, which I'll sort of touch on. Boker Magnum, Boker Plus is kind of at a stratum above that. Then there's Boker Arbolito, which is made. Which is our company in Argentina, because that's been around for quite a while. Around the same time, I think that Boker USA was founded. Another one of the brothers went down to South America and started that thing. And then there's Boker Solingen, which is Boker Germany, made in the factory in Solingen in Germany. So those are the four major sub brands that we operate with.
Okay. And in what realm do you operate primarily?
Well, I run the North American unit. And so I work with all those sub brands. Okay. I manage the body of business in the States.
Jeez. Okay. So that's what I was expecting, because general manager in my line of work basically runs the station, runs everything. Mm-hmm. Does all of the strategizing, does all the strategy and such, and really, guides the ship to a great extent. So that's why I'm a little gobsmacked that one person, obviously you have help, mm-hmm. but is doing that, gets to do that, for the North Americas or for the American, market, because there are so many opportunities there for you to grow the company in interesting ways. And one of the ways I've always loved is the collaborations you do. I have this field
part of our business right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you work that in? How did this become an important part of Boker's business model, and how do you search for talent?
Well, I think it might have been accidental. I think it's been going on for quite some time, obviously, longer than I've been here. And I think that for many years, Boker was you know, Boker comes from, you know, what we would call gentleman knives or grandpa knives, right? You know, stag handled, you know, big bolster, slip joint knives. And then I think when the knife market started to really change post-war, you know, into the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, the knife market changed. It was influenced, of course, by what happened during the war. You know, tactical knives kind of took off at some point. And so knife, the tastes of, I think, global knife consumers changed. And as that happened, I think serendipitously, Boker was approached by designers or approached them or both and said, hey, you know, let's collaborate on something. And so they ended up doing that. And I don't know how many designers we're working with now. Frankly, I have a hard time keeping track of all of our, you know, all of, you know, I have a hard time keeping track of all of our SKUs because we have quite a few. And we have quite a few designers as well. And here in the States, we work with several. You know, Lucas Burnley is one of them. You know, Lucas works with other knife makers as well. But it is a big part of our business and it's exciting. It's fun. We constantly get to review cool new ideas and collaborate with these designers on them. And that is for sure a component of what has, it's fueled our growth undoubtedly.
And if you can link up with, well, someone like Lucas Burnley and the Quaken, and I mean, sometimes I razz that knife on this show because of all the iterations of it, but it's like there are certain knives, the 110, the paramilitary 2, you know, we can name a bunch that people never get tired. The case, Trapper, people never get tired of new versions of the same thing. And that knife is a huge one. And I feel like the Boker Burnley Quaken really got Boker back on the map for me, way back when. And actually, before that, my brother had some switchblades from Boker that he got in the 80s as a high schooler. Mm-hmm. That was actually my introduction. But this, for instance, here, this knife here is a knife that it's just my grail knife to have a Marlowe squail. And it's the sort of thing that mere mortals just can't really get. Yeah. But the fact that I can get this beautifully made, I mean, this Boker, this knife is so well made and so stout.
And I believe that's a Zollingen made blade. Should be.
Is it? Oh, that's so cool. Yes. Yeah, I love this knife. And I, you know, Chuck Gaudreitis. I have a Chuck Gaudreitis, which another great guy who I want to support, but I can't afford a Chuck Gaudreitis custom. This is the knife I was, I was carrying when my youngest daughter was born, you know. The F3, also, a Vox. So if you can lock in on certain designers like that, it could be great for everyone going forward, designer, Boker, and collector alike.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So like I said, it has fueled our growth and we're really happy with what we get out of it. And I think our customers are happy with it. So, you know, there's no doubt about it. We'll continue working with the designers designers like Lucas that bring great ideas to us.
So how does the in-house designing work? And I would imagine that has something to do with your overall plan for the company. How do internal designs get handled and how do you curate, what the look is going to be, what the purpose is going to be?
Well, I mean, there are a few ways that it happens, but fundamentally, you know, there's a team in Germany that, prior to my arrival, there is a team in Germany that produces ideas on an ongoing basis. And there's a team that reviews those and decides which ones to run and which ones not to run. We have a slightly different and I think a rebirth, I would call it, of actual Boker USA knives coming in the not too distant future, which is a selection of knives that'll be entirely designed, you know, born in the US, designed in the US, built in the US, and you know, which we haven't had for quite some time. I think it's been since probably the 80s since Boker America knives were made. So the getting back to a more a firmer answer, there are two ways now that it happens. And, you know, even with the Boker USA stuff, that's all done by the Boker USA and Boker Germany team. We review all those things and decide what goes forward and what doesn't.
How do you gauge what kind of innovation you're going to put forth? I mean, there always seems like there's something innovative coming out from Boker. Do you, does that come just through brainstorming and coming up with cool ideas, or do you set out before a season, before a design season, and say, this season we're going to do this?
It can happen both ways. And it's interesting you bring up innovation, because I think, you know, there's a, in the quadrant of product design, you know, innovation can be great, but it also can be, the flip of it is reliability. And, you know, innovation runs the risk of being maybe not as reliable. So it sort of depends on what the knife is supposed to be for. And if the knife is supposed to be for something highly utilitarian and, you know, with critical, consequences attached to it, you probably don't want a lot of innovation right out of the gate with the thing, because, you know, with innovation comes a proving period, and sometimes it doesn't prove out to be perfect, right? And so, again, it sort of depends on where the product is intended for in that quadrant of product. And, novel, not novel, innovative, reliable. And so, sometimes it's enough. The innovation is enough to just go ahead with it because it seems like a pretty cool thing, and we'll see what it's, you know, how it pans out. And sometimes we opt not to do it if it's for something that has, high stakes involved in its use.
Right.
Like
right.
Military or law enforcement or something like that.
Right. It seems like, an innovation that doesn't pan out to actually be that valuable or have that much utility can be sort of relegated to collectibles until you've sold them all or whatever, however that works.
So you just need to know, what that knife is intended for. And that helps guide what level of innovation goes into it, or, materials, of course.
This past year, sorry, I just interrupted you. In 2021 at Blade Show, the knife that won an innovation award, it was a Fox knife that it was more the Fox system. It was on a little dagger. You know what I'm talking about? It's like,
I know what you're talking about.
It's got an embedded sort of thumb stud that runs in a track. And I thought, oh, that's neat. You know, and I tried it and I was like, oh, that feels neat. And my big question was why, you know, and I thought, well, this is a great collectible. This is a cool thing to have. And maybe the whole purpose of this is to see if that really brings any value, or is that just something they could do and thought to do, so did. And I'm not picking on Fox. I love Fox knives, but that's just one of those innovations I saw. Like that's a difference without a differentiation. You know, like, what's the purpose?
Well, it is cool. You know, I know that knife, and I've played around with it, and it's, it was absolutely worth doing. And I love Fox too. We partner with Fox, on a number of different things. I'm not going to speak ill of them here, and I wouldn't anyway, because I have rarely met a knife that I don't like something about. And on that particular knife, and I'm blanking on its name right now, but that is an innovative way of deploying the blade, and absolutely worth trying to figure it out. And, you know, who knows? Maybe it will become some sort of a standard. I think that for blades that require 100% foolproof, knives that require 100% foolproof blade deployment, maybe not yet, at least. I think it might need some work. But there's absolutely no downside really to putting an idea like that out there. It only gets better with time and testing.
So with something that's so old like knives, especially fixed blades, but I mean, Do you think, from your perspective as, you know, someone who sees it all and runs one of the biggest operations, do you think there's a possibility of hitting peak knife where, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. We have that discussion internally. And, I think that it's, you know, maybe, but, you know, think about it. You know, we've been using knives since before we were really even Homo sapiens, right? We've been using knives for, you know, well over 500,000 years as hominids, right? And so, I don't know. I think it would be, I think it's too soon to say that peak knife is within our sight.
Okay.
I'm sure that people are going to come up with some cool things that haven't been done before.
Yeah, yeah. And if they don't, we have a whole history of awesome stuff to look back on. So the current projects you're working on now, what is exciting? What has just come out in this past year? What did you bring to Blade Show that you're especially proud of and excited about?
Well, you know, a few of the things, one of the things that we do is, and I'm holding one right now, I'm holding the M4 Sherman Damascus, which is a knife made with Damascus steel in the blade. The Damascus includes steel from a salvaged actual, you know, M4 Sherman tank. And that's just, those are always very fun projects. And one of the, you know, this wasn't new at Blade, but, is in the past couple of years. We've got a, Messerschmitt, version of this, you know, of the idea, wow, which uses Messerschmitt steel, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And so those are always exciting because they have so much history in them. They have so much actual history in the blade. And, it's just really cool to hold something like that in your hand. And, of course they're collectibles, but you could carry this, you know, you could carry it every day, open boxes with it if you wanted to. I wouldn't because I'd want to keep it kind of fresh and nice.
Can I see it? You keep teasing.
Yeah. Sorry about that. So it's got a micarta. You know, micarta scale. There's the Damascus. I think you can see that in the light there.
Beautiful clip point blade.
Yep. And a lot of design elements are intended to reference the M4 tank. You know, just the lines and, you know, the pivot is reminiscent of the, you know, the drive, hub or whatever it's called on an M4.
Man, that's beautiful. And the pattern looks gorgeous on that steel. Yeah. That's a titanium frame lock?
Yes.
Messerschmitt, just you saying Messerschmitt, that's got to mean, I know Messer means knife. Messerschmitt must mean knife smith, right?
Yeah, technically it does. But the Messerschmitt, you know, of course, was a famous plane.
Airplane.
That was used in World War II. And so we took the idea and applied it to the Messerschmitt.
I love that.
We've done it with a few other things. Originally, we did it with the Kalashnikov. That was one of the projects that really kicked off that whole idea, was taking Kalashnikov steel, Damascus.
That was what I was, next thing I wanted to talk about is the Kalashnikov. I have the XL Bowie. I love this knife. Very cool. This whole Kalashnikov line is vast. Lots of really cool different blade shapes, which I love. Great action on all of them, relatively, like quite affordable, very robust. These are just great knives. How did this come about? Like what's the story behind the Kalashnikov and why do you think it's so successful?
Well, you're right that it is an entire franchise of knives for us. And it spans, you know, lots of different knife types. The story as I have heard it, is that, our CEO, Karsten, decided that it might be a good idea to make a Kalashnikov with Kalashnikov himself, with his blessing, and sought him out, found him where he was living in Russia, arranged a visit somehow, and I'm not sure the connections he used to do that. This is while he was still alive. And went and met with him. And, you know, there's some stories around, you know, what they talked about, which I won't go into because at some point we'll probably tell the story. So I don't want to reveal too much of it. But, for the first time ever, he agreed to allow, somebody to make knives with his name on it. And so, that's how it started. I don't know the year that happened. But to my knowledge, Boker was the first company that he agreed to make that deal with and to have his name on knives.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, of course, you can't just slap someone's name on your blade like that.
Yeah, he agreed to it.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are so sturdy and reliable, and it's the kind of knife that you can use very... this one I don't use. It's a little big. But I have the Dagger Desert version, and you can just use it for anything. They just keep going. And mine, that one was an Aus 8, very well heat treated Aus 8. So with Boker USA and you guiding this, what do you want? Where do you want to take the company? What are your concerns, and what are the kind of things you want to bring uniquely to the company?
Well, you know, my concerns are many. You know, I talked earlier about fires every day, and there are fires every day, operational fires and sales fires, marketing fires. Where I'd like to take us is kind of back to the future. I mentioned it earlier that, you know, for a period of time, Boker USA was designing and building knives right here in the States, and that went away in the 80s. And so I want to take us back to that. To having a full line of American designed and built knives in the States. So we will achieve that at some point. You know, it's challenging, of course, these days with the loss of some manufacturing know-how in the States, but we know we can pull it off. And, you know, commercially, we have many challenges. You know, and I don't know how much you want to go into it on this podcast, but, you know, it's a complex environment of sales channels out there, you know, with online and Amazon and independent stores and big box and, you know, specialty retail. It's difficult to manage all of those different channels and make them all healthy, at least the ones that you're in, because they can compete with each other. And, you know, in fact, if you do it poorly, you can kill yourself, right? And that has happened to other brands before and knife brands. And, you know, you mentioned SOG earlier. SOG got themselves, I think, into some trouble because of that, because of their big box, excursion. And so, building a healthier balance of where we sell knives through is one of the things that I'm looking at, making sure that wherever we are, whatever sales channel we're in, whether it's independent or specialty chain or, you know, all those that I mentioned, that we are doing right by our partners in that channel and not posing risk to partners in other channels. So that requires product segmentation, requires strict adherence to pricing concerns. So those are some of the challenges that we're looking at addressing in the coming year or so, is making sure that we have a healthy business so that we can keep going for another, you know, 200 years or whatever it is.
The idea of bringing manufacture of these knives or some of them to the United States is so exciting. And, you know, we talk about that a lot here. A lot of the guests I have on the show are always trying to figure out how to bring production here if they're making designs that are being produced overseas. And a lot of the times, a lot of the time it's not tenable because they're very small companies. Boker is a nice, you know, is a great company with a great reputation and history. And if anyone's going to be able to do it, it's a company like Boker. Mm-hmm. Would OEM be something that an American made, a USA manufacturer, a Bokering manufacturing facility would consider? Sorry, that didn't come out well, but you know what I mean. Would you OEM?
Would we OEM for other makers?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, probably not. I would never say never, right? The first challenge is make sure that you can do it, build it, make sure that your foundation is strong enough to support what your goals are. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're a brand, and we need to support our brand. And our brand is not that of just purely a manufacturer, right? We have a Boker brand. And so, supporting that brand is priority number one. And so long as we're doing that, then we would probably consider opportunities, but that's getting way ahead of the game for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, first we've got to, build up a strong platform for making stuff here.
Yeah, I think that's hope against hope in a lot of ways, just because when asking people, it seems like a very uphill climb. Mm-hmm. to bring stuff manufacturing back here to a greater extent. But that's something to aim for. And I'm glad that Boker is starting that, because others will follow. And, this might have to be a necessity in the future. Hopefully things remain free enough that it isn't, but,
Yeah.
But in any case, the knives that would be made here in the United States, what kind of difference would you be aiming for in the product itself to distinguish it?
To distinguish it from current Boker, or just
to distinguish it in the marketplace? To distinguish it in the marketplace as an American-made Boker.
Yeah. Well, I think that, what's important to my team is making sure that whatever we produce under that sort of new banner of knives that we produce is, to me, it's important that knives, that those knives be purpose designed and purpose, purpose made, meaning, I don't want us to, in that particular line, and we have many knives where this is not the case, but in this line that we're talking about, it's important to me that they, everything in the knife has a purpose and a use and a reason. And if it doesn't have a reason or a purpose or a use, then it shouldn't be there. So in other words, embellishments are really not part of that line. To say it's utilitarian might be misunderstood, but fundamentally that's what it means, is that the knives have a reason for being, and everything in that knife, including its design and its materials, is made for that, intended for that. So that's probably number one. Luckily, with, all of the activities for which we want to design, produce knives, and I know this being a knife user on a number of different fronts myself, what's right for one person is not right for another person. So it's not like there is one ultimate, elk skinning knife. there are many ultimate elk skinning knives, as many as there are probably elk hunters. And so, I don't think that the market is too crowded, because I think that there are always people who are going to want your particular vision of how a knife works. And, I don't think that, other knife makers are doing a crummy job with it. I think that there are some amazing knives out there and in all sorts of different, use scenarios. I just think there's a lot of opportunity for more. And, other views of how a knife should be made to do a job. And that's what I want to bring to the new Boker America line.
That sounds good. You have a really deep, wide catalog, so many products. So how do you ensure, and now we're talking about the USA product, that's something a little different, but how do you, across such a wide product line, ensure that they're all kind of pulling their weight as designs? And it seems like you have so many knives always available. There are a couple of companies that I always comment on. Like, they have a million models and they're always available. How do you manage that? How how do you know whether a knife is pulling its weight?
Well, I mean, that part is relatively easy. You look at your sales reports, right? How do you manage it? With great difficulty. It requires a lot of, a lot of attention to detail and a lot of, warehouse space. And, luckily they're small items. And so, they don't take up that much space really. They do take up bandwidth. I mean, SKU proliferation is a problem for many companies and, possibly even for Boker. I don't think that we have reached a point where it's an alarming thing for me. I'm excited by it because it affords us a lot of opportunities. Like I was kind of talking about earlier, being in so many different sales channels, it's nice to have this many items to offer to our sales channels because, we're very well positioned to do some product segmentation by channels, right? And so that's one of the solutions that we're looking at. So, I view it as a real advantage for us that we have so many, and it's worth sort of the hassle that we have to go through to review them and make sure that, there aren't any dogs in there. And if there are dogs, we kick them out, right?
Right, right.
But it's also a way for us to learn really fast what resonates with people and what doesn't, and in what markets.
Because you have such a wide sample, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, right. And that's the beautiful part, too, about a company this old, I would imagine, is that you're in a flow already. It's not like you're you came into this company, the company was in a flow, you're bringing your vision into this, and you get to steer it. But the company itself was already, was already there, which is a trusted thing. So it's kind of like the choices you make because they put their trust in you, and the public has trust in the brand. Man, that's a great spot. That's a great spot to be in.
Oh, it's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
there is a lot of upside for the brand in America. No doubt about it. I'm, really pretty pleased to be in this position to put some of those ideas out there.
You have the EDC market, really on lock, and then hunting seems really big. The tactical seems really big. And then it seems like you have real legit, like military, I don't know, maybe military contracts, or you make military knives. You are very well diversified across all those. What to you is the most exciting of all of those? I know you're an outdoorsman, but what's the most exciting to you? And then what do you think the world is the most in love with?
Well, I think, there's sort of two categories that are exciting to me, professionally, and personally too, I suppose. The first one is, what you call tactical. I would call it protect, maybe is a word that we throw around a lot here at Boker. So that category is exciting to me. And the overlap of that category with EDC is also exciting, as of course is EDC. EDC is just so wide and broad. You do everything from, pick lint out of things to opening boxes with EDC knives. But it could also mean, what you carry every day for self-protection, right? So those two categories and how they overlap are interesting to me. Personally, I am an outdoorsman and I hunt a fair bit. And so, hunting knives has a particular interest for me and for Boker. I think that we'll probably look at that space and see what we can produce there. Military, who knows? That is a tough game, and we have, of course, played in it before and continue to. But it changes quite rapidly, and it's feast or famine. And so I think that there are those other categories have more promise in the long term for us.
More the commercial market where you have people like me who get their mind set on a knife and then they just have to have it.
Yeah.
Save up or whatever, just spend the money right then and there. And yeah. What is your, okay. So we know you like the crossover, protect, self-protection knives and EDC. That is definitely where my tastes are for folders. I do love big bowies and stuff like stuff that Arbolito makes, for sure. But what are your favorite models from Boker? Personally, favorites. I want you to name favorites.
Okay.
So all the other ones feel jealous. No.
Well, I have to admit this one I showed you earlier, this M4 Sherman Damascus. Yeah. I love its size. I love its pivot action is fantastic. It flips out incredibly easy because of that. I mean, it's just a beautiful pivot action. So I like that. Like I said, I'd carry this, but I tend to not carry it too much because I don't want to hammer on it. It's almost too beautiful to do that. This Quaken Flipper is another favorite of mine. Really low profile. It's titanium mini flipper and, with a, you know, the, liner lock in it. So I like this because it's really skinny. I can fit it next to my phone in my front pocket. So those two I've been having fun with. What else do I have around here? Of course, I have, you know, our Svashnikov OTF, which is really fun to bring out at dinner parties. It annoys my wife and gets the other dudes pretty excited. So it's just fun to pull out for those things. Those are kind of the three that have been floating in and out of my pocket the past couple of weeks.
So do you just kind of rotate new Bokers in and out of your pockets, kind of?
Boker and other knives. I like to use other people's knives as well, just to get a sense of what's going on out there and what I like about them, what I don't like about them. And, I got others in here. I probably shouldn't be talking about this as a Boker guy, but I got an Emerson that I've been carrying for a few days to see what that's like. That's kind of interesting.
I have a nice little collection of them. They take some getting used to, but I love my Emerson. So what do you think the trends? I mean, so you're not locked in on Boker. You have a wandering eye, which is good and healthy, so that you can bring new ideas and such. But what are some of the trends out there that you're seeing that you think will last? And what are some of the trends out there that you're seeing that you think are just going to go the way of the dodo?
Well, yeah, that's a tough question. That's a very good one. I think that we're going to see there's been a trend to kind of exotic, maybe not expensive, but strange and exotic scale materials, right? I can't even name some of them now. I'm visiting a customer not that long ago, and they were showing me some kind of new stuff that they were doing with some special makeups with it. And so I think using cool materials as scale, using cool scale materials, I think is a trend that will continue, because it sort of it makes it into a true fashion accessory thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what they've become for a lot of people, is kind of a functional fashion accessory. And so by using different materials, you get to have fun with it as the knife guy, right? And so that's going to continue, I believe. I think that with the work that ACTI has done and Knife Rights has done, the acceptance of autos is pretty cool, is great. I'm glad to see that it's happening. And, you know, we've had even some really recent developments, I think, in Pennsylvania that are positive for carrying autos. So I think that you're going to see some pretty cool, things come out in autos, both, you know, regular autos and OTF autos. That's my guess, is that people are going to jump on that and produce some really cool new innovative mechanisms probably in that field, because there the market is now growing, right?
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. I live in Virginia, and as of July 1st, I've been able to carry, buy, sell, and all that. Yeah. In terms of things like, say, front flippers, or something like that, how do you, especially in your position, how do you know whether to say, hey guys, these front flippers are real big. Go out there, make me four different front flipper models. Like, how do you know when to kind of jump into something that people seem to be all crazy about? And how do you know when just to kind of go about your business and see if it naturally evolves out of your own design?
I think that's hard to articulate, and I don't know that if I answered it, it would even be correct about how I do it. But I think I think hunches, when one has a hunch about something, and this is the case with any product, right? It doesn't, it could be knives or anything. Good hunches are probably subconsciously recognized patterns that you can't articulate, and so it's a hunch. And so I think that on something that you can't quite put your finger on why you think it's going to be, a big deal. In a lot of cases, in most cases, your mind has observed enough information to spot patterns that you cannot articulate, consciously, don't even know about consciously. So you think, I think this is going to be big. And so, But it is always a roll of the dice, right? Because if it were so obvious that you could articulate it, then you could probably analyze it and determine whether or not it was a good idea, in a quantifiable way. So I think that one way is just to trust that, hunch, which again, I think is just good pattern recognition. And the other way is to wait for other people to prove it or not. And then you jump on it. And of course, by then you've missed the good timing of it. So the way I look at it is I think about my hunches really carefully and what I'm going to put all my money on. and I pressure test it a while and then I walk away from it a little bit before I make my final decision so that I can make it with what I think is a clear head. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No. It does because, it's not something you can nail down, obviously. Yeah. That's interesting to hear how someone in your position does that because I'm sure the weight, the job comes with its pressures, and you don't want to be making too many hunches that you don't feel positive about. But yes, for sure. Especially you get that sense of, picking up patterns, unrecognized patterns when you're driving. You see someone swerve twice a little tiny bit and okay, they're going to come into my lane. Get ready.
Yeah.
That kind of hunch. That's an interesting way of putting it.
And you can have the same thing with a knife, with a knife mechanism or, a knife material or, knife idea for a knife design. You could see how somebody is using a knife and subconsciously register that, they're not doing anything with their index finger. Now, what if there were a thing over there that could, flip the blade open? Somebody did that. I don't know who did the first, flipper mechanism, but, at some point that is what went through their head. And, I'm glad they did it because, flippers are kind of cool, right? They serve a pretty good purpose.
Yeah, I feel like front flippers are kind of still in that adolescent phase where, I have a few and I like them, and some are really great and some aren't. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is this necessary? I mean, so much of it is not, but I like to, I don't know, I like to think about it. I like to wonder because, I've been collecting knives my whole life too, and I feel like I've seen things come and go. Is this something that's going to come and go? Well, if you don't jump on it early and get the recognition for inventing it, then you do get to benefit to see if it pans out. And then, okay, everyone's doing it. Everyone wants it. Let's just do it and quietly put this out. We don't have to make a big deal about it, but you can follow it that way too. Do you design knives? Do you have a knife out there of your design that Boker is making or anyone else?
Not the Boker's making. I've designed a knife for my brother's outfit, a hunting knife that he's got in his line. That I've personally used, on some of my hunt trips. But I have not designed myself any for Boker that are in production.
Is this something you could take advantage of your position and hand a designer a cocktail napkin?
Oh, I would do that, unabashedly. I would do that without any shame. But I'm sure that they would, you know, make it a real designer's, you know, work, right?
Right.
Doesn't mean that there isn't something fundamentally interesting about my napkin drawings. You know, something that could be used, but I'm not the guy who can produce the final knife design. I'd rather have somebody who's really good with it and understands form factors and, you know, kinesiology, the hands and stuff to make that happen.
So before you came to SOG and before you moved over, you were in other outdoor industries and working, you know, doing similar kind of stuff in other fields. What would you say the knife industry is unique from other industries you've worked in?
Well, I think it's a little slow to adopt some new commercial ideas, and I'd say it's traditional. It's more traditional than the broader outdoor market that I kind of professionally grew up in. But you know, we are dealing with man's oldest tool, so there's probably pretty good reason for it to be traditional in that sense. I think, and it also all revolves around one thing. You know, you're not talking about tents. You're not talking about tents and sleeping bags and camp stoves and, you know, whatever else you need out there. You're talking about one kind of item, and you know, we kind of veered toward, you know, we talked about peak knife earlier. One would think that we would have reached peak knife in 2022. And a really good question and a scary one. If you're a knife guy, you don't want it to be, yes, we've reached it. But it's pretty amazing that this industry, still continues to churn out really, really cool stuff after, 500,000 years or whatever it's been of humans using this tool. And so that's what's exciting to me, is that every day, Justin, you know, of course, I've got a Boker catalog of stuff to look at, but I look at other people's items too. And every day I see something that's interesting and you know, catches my eye and makes me want to hold it and use it.
I've never been as enthusiastic about other products as I, not even nearly as I am about knives. So I'm not sure. But it seems like the knife community, in quotes, or just the knife community, is very vocal and is really excited to give feedback. And in a lot of cases, knife makers and companies are very excited to receive that because they can hone their designs and their product to be what the customer wants. Do you see that same sort of enthusiastic feedback in the broader outdoor industry? Like people sleeping bags, are they excited about sleeping bags like they're about knives and
not
other
to the same extent? You know, I think it doesn't have the same passion to it that knives seem to have. You know, that is another great question, because it brings the idea of passion into it. You know, and passion is something that Boker talks a lot about, passion about knives. And, the people that use our knives that I talk to are, you know, they're at a completely different class of product users than users of other categories of products that I've dealt with before. And that's exciting because they care. I mean, they really care.
Yeah.
And you're right. They are very, very opinionated about it. And sometimes they've got really great ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to get emotionally worked up about a finger choil? I can do that.
Right.
Well, so tell listeners and viewers what they can expect from Boker, over the next year, and it just in terms of currents and such. And what they can look forward to.
Well, over the next year, I think they can expect to see us out interacting with them more. You know, we have on our calendar the intent to go to, you know, events and places where knife people congregate so that we can interact and engage with them more and understand what their needs are and what their preferences are. So, just a Boker presence is something that they'll probably see more of over the next year and certainly 2 years. And sometime, of course, I've alluded to it a few times, sometime in the next year or year and a half, they'll see some new American born designs trickling out there into the marketplace. From kind of a knife person's point of view perspective out there, those are two things that you can expect to see coming from Boker soon.
That's great. I think knife fans and Boker collectors and fans will love that sort of public outreach. I know, well, just as a nerd myself, I know I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. And well, that's the reason why people go to Blade Show and other shows like that at great expense to meet those people, meet the people who are making these things that we're so passionate about.
Yeah, that's how we met.
Yeah, exactly. Chaz, thank you so much for coming on the Knife Junkie podcast and talking all about Boker. It's been a pleasure, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You got it. Take care, sir.
Do you use terms like handle the blade ratio, walk and talk, hair pop and sharp, or tank-like? Then you are a dork and a knife junkie.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Chaz Fisher from Boker USA, general manager. I made it look like he's just playing with knives in that intro, but man, what a high-pressure job. It was really cool as a business illiterate to talk to him about what it's like running such an awesome operation. Very excited about the USA-made knife line that will be coming out in the offing. Be sure to join us next week for another great interview and Wednesday for the midweek supplemental. And, of course, don't forget Thursday night, Knives Live, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. Until then, for Jim, working his magic behind the switcher, I'm Bob DeMarco saying, don't take dull for an answer.
Thanks for listening to the Knife Junkie Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review at reviewthepodcast.com. For show notes for today's episode, additional resources, and to listen to past episodes, visit our website, theknifejunkie.com. You can also watch our latest videos on YouTube at theknifejunkie.com/YouTube. Check out some great knife photos on theknifejunkie.com/Instagram and join our Facebook group at theknifejunkie.com/Facebook. And if you have a question or comment, email them to bob@theknifejunkie.com or call our 24/7 listener line at 724-466-4487 and you may hear your comment or question answered on an upcoming episode of the Knife Junkie Podcast.